And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. That revolution starts right now. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show. We're here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Paradise Community Guild, fostering community by nurturing creativity, practicing stewardship of nature, and promoting values of sustainability. Paradise Community Guild invites all people of goodwill and community spirit to help us carry out that intent. To get involved, visit paradiseguild.org, or you can find them on Facebook. You can also give them a call at 762-1490. All right, so here we are. It feels so amazing to be back in the studio. It has been more weeks than I can even remember. It feels so good to be back behind the microphone. I do want to do a special shout out to Chris Nelson for sitting in for me a couple weeks ago, and to the KZFR staff for covering me last week when I was just sick. I just couldn't pull it off that day. I got to say, the KZFR family really looks out for each other, and that includes you, the listener. I think, you know, what makes our community so amazing is KZFR, is we listen to each other and we share ideas and we share art and music and information. And so it's fabulous to be back here in the studio. Thanks so much for joining me. So the last time I was here was immediately after the midterm elections, and we were still waiting on the results of most of the races across the country, and we were waiting on the results right here in Chico and in Butte County and in Oroville. So I think, you know, since the midterm election is officially behind us now, we can finally circle back onto the many topics that impact Butte County and the Sacramento Valley on a regular basis. So one of the recurring topics for The Real Issue, one that we will cover tonight, is the housing and homeless crisis here in the North State, particularly here in Butte County and in Chico. And, you know, just as a reminder, the homeless crisis is not an isolated crisis to Butte County. I mean, contrary to what many folks on that far right would like for you to believe, this is not an isolated Chico or Butte County crisis. So, you know, for example, on Monday, former Congresswoman Karen Bass was sworn in as the Los Angeles first African-American and female mayor. Karen Bass ran and won on the issue of addressing the homeless crisis. And during her inaugural speech on Monday, she declared a homeless emergency in L.A., and she committed to addressing it. Her declaration down in L.A. just this past Monday was similar to the declaration issued by Chico's mayor back in 2018 before the campfire destroyed 14,000 homes. So it is, this homeless crisis is not isolated here in our community. So tonight on The Real Issue, we will spend our time getting an update on the homeless crisis here in Butte County from some of the folks who are working on the ground every single day using some of the most innovative ideas to address our crisis. To talk about homelessness in our region, I have with me in the studio is the Executive Director of Chico Housing Action Team, also known as CHAT. I have Nicole Drummond here. And I also have Social Services Director of Chico Housing Action Team, Amber Benedict. I am so happy to have the two of you here in the studio with me.
Thank you so much, Sue.
Now, let me get those mics going again. For some reason, the mics are goofed up. Let me hear from you, Amber.
Hi, Sue.
You are there. How about you, Nicole?
Thanks so much for having us. We're excited to chat about CHAT.
Okay. I finally chat about CHAT. Right on. I finally got you on the right mics. Perfect, perfect, perfect. So I'm so happy to have both of you here. I mean, I haven't seen you in a while. I haven't even talked to you in a while. Elections sort of get in the way of having real conversations with people. So let's just jump right in. Here in Chico in Butte County, the two of you, Amber and Nicole, you're on the ground every single day. You're doing the work. A lot of us sit sort of bird's eye view and we figure out, I think I could fix that problem, but you all are in the trenches. So, Nicole, I want to start with you. Give us an overview of the housing crisis, the homeless crisis here in the Chico area. Are we seeing any progress being made in reducing the number of people who are not secure in their housing needs? Either one of you.
I'm going to say that just because there's such a massive shortage of housing in general in all of California, not just in Butte County, the campfire has definitely added to the need of housing that we have. But we're just lacking housing in general all over the state.
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a need for our services. And I don't know the exact numbers. The PIT count is coming up in January, so I am curious. The PIT count, some people may know, is a census of currently unhoused individuals in our community. So that will help us understand if the population actually is going down. But what we find our part to be is just to house as many people as possible in our community.
The Nicole Drummond, you sort of caught me off guard. The point in time count is again this year, coming up in 2023. You know, they come so fast. I think elections get in the way, and they it feels like we just did a point in time count just this year. So 2 years, okay, every 2 years. So we'll have you on to talk about that as well. It is. It's in the odd number years, because it was supposed to happen right after the campfire in 2018. Oh, go ahead.
So just to clarify that, the pit count does happen actually every year. So, but there's only a count that happens out in the community every 2 years. And so last year we had our community count. This year we have an internal count with all agencies that house people or have or shelter people.
Got it. Got it. Okay. So just to kind of ground me here, it was just this past February that we actually went out into the community and counted. Mm-hmm. This year it's the internal count.
Yes.
Okay, great. All of a sudden I was like, I think I've lost my mind in terms of timing. So, okay, great. So you'll come back in a couple. How does it feel? Even if we don't have the raw numbers, how is it feeling to you? And I know we're in a time warp with the pandemic. How is it feeling in terms of demand for housing in the work that the two of you do?
We can't try to figure out housing fast enough. We are always looking for new opportunities, whether that is trying to figure out how to buy houses, build houses at this point, or continue with our master leasing. There's always a need. We, at one point, were looking at we had a list of individuals. We kind of transitioned the way that we were taking individuals into chat. But we had over 600 people on applicants trying to get into our housing. And every single day we were answering phone calls and trying to find resources out in their community to either get them sheltered or housed.
So you're not sitting around waiting for people to knock on your door.
No.
You've got enough demand out there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes. We haven't cured homelessness yet. We are trying.
All right. Well, that, unfortunately, I was going to say that's good to know, but anyway. So in terms of there for a while, I mean, I've been here on The Real Issue, we've been tracking the issue of homelessness since about 2008. I think that's the first time we really started to talk about the issue. So quite a while ago. And there has been these sort of waves. You know, for a while, there was an increase in veterans. And then a few years ago, we saw an increase in women. What are you seeing now? Is there an increase in any particular demographic, or it's just so bad it's hard to tell?
You know, we have really seen a need to house veterans, and we're really grateful for partnership with the local VFW to be able to house many of them. There's also a significant need of families with children, actually, unsheltered, and there's limited availability for them. So that's something we definitely are focusing on, especially as our families program is running out of grant funding. So we're actively looking for funding to continue to house families with children.
And the children, I mean, we can talk about every single demographic and say this is tragic. And often I think what we generally tend to do is to say, well, if they hadn't made such bad choices or whatever. But when we talk about children, I don't even think we can use that that argument. I mean, it's the cruelest part of this whole situation.
Also, the seniors and seniors with medical conditions are really substantial. And I know we have a pretty substantial partnership with True North Housing Alliance, and the Torres shelter is mostly seniors. And many people we house have medical conditions and are in need of stable housing in order to get surgeries and medical care as well. So that is a huge population. And we're trying to make sure we have housing that has availability for wheelchairs and is ADA accessible, and that's been a big focus of ours recently as well.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We are talking about homelessness. You know, we've been talking since boy, I think since about May, we've been talking about elections and the midterm elections in particular. And so this is the first show we're finally getting back to. What are the issues of the community? Of course, they're interwoven in all of those elections and the candidates' conversations and the, you know, the ballot initiatives and those kinds of things. But this time, we're for this edition of The Real Issue, I have Nicole Drummond, who is the executive director of Chico Housing Action Team, and I have Amber Benedict, who is the social services director of Chico Housing Action Team, in the studio giving us an update on what is going on with CHAT. Nicole, I do want to talk with you. I want to, as the executive director, I want to kind of ask you about the organization. I know that that's your background, is creating these kinds of organizations, and I think people miss that. Like to be able to build a nonprofit, to build an organization, to understand how the finances work, and to do recruitment and hiring and actually make sure the entire organization functions. I don't think people realize that that's a talent and a skill that is often learned. And so I want to ask you about it a little bit. I want to dig a little bit into this. So, you know, CHAT was started back in around 2013, and it was created by the small group of folks who essentially said, hey, you know, people are hurting, and we got to do something about that. And of course, you know, some of those people include Bob Trausch and Leslie Johnson and Sheldon Praiser, and there were so many other folks back in the beginning, and people have come and gone along the way. And it was such a grassroots effort, and in the last 10 years, it has grown to such an amazing, I mean, almost head-spinning level. And even in the last year, it has grown exponentially. So as the executive director, Nicole Drummond, talk about, you know, what has happened to this organization, particularly in the last year.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. I'm incredibly passionate about leadership and organizational culture and developing efficiency, because people can do so much better work when things are organized and systematic. And I feel so humbled and appreciative to walk into an organization that I, you know, volunteered with and connected to from the very beginning, and now had the opportunity. Part of my job description I just looked at before we walked in here was to guide CHAT to the next level of growth and development. Uh-huh. And I walked in right at the moment where a lot was happening. There is a substantial need for people to house people, and CHAT has figured out how to do it. And I really had the opportunity to walk in and spend time creating systems, keeping the culture of responsivity and nimbleness and grassroots, but also raising the professionalism and creating the capacity so that we can take on more and be part of the solution and be able to be proactive in that and sustainable and be around for as long as we need to be. Permanently housing people means that we are stable and we have all our ducks in a row and people feel really good about what they're doing. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest passions is that helpers often are relied upon in society to do all of the helping without any space for themselves or rejuvenation or until they burn out. And I really believe if we can support everyone in our society to help to their capacity and refill themselves, they can continue to help and continue to contribute to their community. And mm-hmm. I feel like CHAT was the perfect place for that passion of mine to organize and be as efficient as possible so we can help as many people as possible.
So I want to kind of lay it out there right now, is that here at The Real Issue, and clearly as I look across the table to the two of you, we all love the founders of Chico Housing Action Team. We all yes. love the founders, Bob and Leslie and Sheldon and Charles and so on and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there is sort of an evolution of an organization, right? And so you start with what's called the founding board, where that is the characteristics are a group of people say, we're just going to do it. And then they become an organization, and they're the ones that do everything. And then that second sort of phase of an organization is that you start to professionalize, and it's in that transition from stage one to stage two where most organizations fall apart and just, you know, well, that was a good, that was fun. It's time to move on, right? And it's that transitional phase that is so critical. How do you see chat? You use the word, Nicole, you use the word nimbleness. How do you see chat being able to be nimble and responsive? Because homelessness, there's no formula for homelessness, for curing it or even getting into it, right? Everything is, there's so many different factors. How do you stay nimble from that founding board to that more professional board?
Yeah, that's my 3 a.m. question.
But
sorry. We are definitely, you know, really transitioning from that boots on the ground board to a more governing board. But my philosophy, and I've spent a lot of time with the founders talking about it, is really if we can project and we can have plans, we can create the space to be able to flex within that and be responsive. So we can have a roadmap and then still respond and have systems to be able to do that well. And there's not a formula, but I would say chat has perfected how to house individuals that a lot of other people have had trouble with. And we do know that bringing people in, they need wraparound services. We have social services. We support people to get on different types of income assistance. We have furniture. We have food. We have caring. And it's not a formula, it's very individualized, but there is a lot of wraparound that happens really well. And I think if we can get that all set up, then we can be more responsive and nimble to the needs of our community while still progressing and being proactive and sustainable.
Amber Benedict, Social Services Director, as I was listening to Nicole, you were nodding and agreeing, and you've been around a little longer than Nicole. So I thought I'd give you the opportunity to jump right in, because you've worked with some of the you've worked with all of the founders. They're still around. They're still doing good work. They're still carrying out their vision.
Mm-hmm. It has been so cool to be able to see this entire transition go from the founder sitting around this little table in not even what was our office, and really creating that wraparound services part that she was talking about through volunteering, and then being able to watch them grow into 3 employees to now us having almost 31 employees at this point, to support all the people that we have in housing, and being able to see how we've been able to take that wraparound creation that the volunteers started with that worked so well with keeping people in housing and turn that into what has moved forward into our social services part. Not just our social services, because like she was saying, it also comes with our food program that is still all volunteers, and our warehouse program that is also ran by volunteers. So this mix of volunteers and employees is a huge part of us moving forward and creating this very well put together system.
Let me just mention, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We're talking about Chico Housing Action Team as an organization in particular, but also as part of the overall effort to address the housing crisis here in Chico and throughout Butte County. So to both of you, Executive Director Nicole Drummond and Social Services Director Amber Benedict, I have this sort of strange question, and I don't actually know how to quite ask it. So I know the founders pretty well, and I won't say I was at the founding, but I've known them long enough, and I've watched them kind of do this. And they're just amazing folks. And I won't say that they were clueless. I mean, I would never say that about any of them. But I've watched them over these last 10 years learn so much. I mean, these folks are just like, they don't come at it as, we know exactly how to do everything. They come at it as, we can figure this out. And they're such amazing people. And so I'm curious, the two of you are formally educated to do this work. And I'm wondering, did they sort of learn what you learned formally, or was it sort of this co-creation of they're on the ground? I mean, because chat is so innovative. Mm-hmm. There's no model for chat. So it's not like we've been doing this a long time and then they figured it out. It's like they sort of figured out this new idea, and you all came around and said, yeah, let's formalize it in a sense. Mm-hmm. How did that work, that organic plus the academic?
So they are, you know, that the attitude of that chat can do it was, it came from them. And we're just kind of taking off with that and seeing what we can do with what they already kind of put in place. So we just happen to have the knowledge of putting together some of those more formal processes, they're willingly also going along with us and learning as we put things in front of them to help formalize this organization.
Yeah. And how is it going to be sustainable? Let's talk about sustainability of this. Nicole?
Yeah, I mean, sustainability to us, we've been really playing around with that definition, and I hope to have that on the website really formalized very soon. But sustainability means so much. It's permanency for our residents. It's financial sustainability for the organization. So we do rely heavily on our sustaining donors. We have many government grants. I've never had the ability to look at so much braided funding, it's called. We have so much different funding and support. It's beautiful. But to be able to project that and look exactly, you know, at our financial sustainability, sustainability of employees and volunteers. How do we keep people going in this work? There's a lot of trauma involved. It's big work. It's time consuming. There's a lot of burnout in social services or in any type of human service work. So how do we cultivate an environment where you can actively take care of yourself so you can continue to take care of others? That's part of sustainability as well. We're also looking at all of our practices and how we can tread lightly on the earth. You know, how can we have solar panels on our houses? How can we update our maintenance crew to be really sustainable? How can we support residents to have bicycles? All of those things. So we're looking thoroughly at all of our business practices to be sustainable in all the different meanings of the word.
And if I could take it back to the founders again, they had done a very good job of setting us up for sustainability. They like to call themselves, if I can remember this right, not products of their own. Oh, what was that called? Basically, they raised so much money and they figured out how to have those hard conversations with individuals to bring in money. And Leslie spent so much time learning how to write grants and bring in funding. And they've created such a source for us to continue the growth, especially over this last year, that I don't even think they realized what they were doing when they were doing it.
And to be honest, did I interrupt you, Amber?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So, I mean, to be honest, you know, one of the things that makes me crazy in Chico politics is so wacky these days. And to talk about, I think it's called the homeless industrial complex or something wacky like that. It's just like, oh yeah, people get rich off of the homeless industry. I mean, it's just so absurd. So I just want to sort of clarify for a minute. When you're talking about grants, it's not like, oh, let's get grants so I can, you know, make $500,000 in my salary. It's let's get grants to do this work, to actually house people. And the thing is, the way that we get grants is you have a good idea. You provide a good service. And so let's circle back and talk about what is the service that you offer?
What is the service that we offer? We offer a lot of individual programs to help a lot of individual populations. But our main service is to really remove barriers to housing to people that are unhoused in our community. And we do, we have transitioned to fully use coordinated entry, which is a community-wide database, so that we can connect with all the other service providers that are doing really wonderful work in our areas, as well. And also so we can eliminate any potential bias. So we really are connecting with that unhoused population and moving them into mostly shared housing. Some of our programs are not shared housing, but for the most part, we rent a bedroom, people have a lock, they have social services, we provide property management, maintenance, furniture, food. We connect with other community organizations, behavioral health, other service providers to be able to make sure they get their needs met and support them to get different types of income, social security, disability, job, resumes, all of those types of things. Reunifying with family that maybe they had been estranged from. Anything we can do to support them to continue to be housed, either staying in our housing or moving on to a different independent situation.
So, Amber, were you going to jump in? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, great answer. I want to continue on with exactly what you just said. Nicole Drummond, when I asked you, okay, what's the service that CHAT provides? And it was interesting because it was an answer I hadn't quite expected. I thought you were going to run down and give me the five programs. But it was a very interesting answer because you said the service you provide is reduce the barriers to housing. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's what you do. Now, I want to ask you about this coordinated entry. So that, as I was reading through your website, I saw that. And that's, I think it's new. At least it's new to me. And as you quickly explained that, or you sort of went over that, you said it eliminates bias. Explain what that means. What is coordinated entry, and why is, and what do you mean by eliminating bias? Why is that important? Amber Benedict.
Yeah. So coordinated entry is a system that the state actually it comes from HUD. So it's a national program that is then operated by our local county. And so it is something where individuals can either access, they can be put on a list through 211, or they can go to, say, the Torah Shelter or Jesus Center. Any organization in town that works with unhoused folks can put somebody on this list. And how it removes the biases is it doesn't give you the information of the individual. It basically creates like a scoring method a little bit of how long has somebody been unhoused? Are they a veteran? Do they have a mental illness? Is there a physical illness that goes along with it? Is it a family? And so it gives us kind of this basic understanding of who we're looking at, but they put a score on them. And so we are able to then look at this list and take individuals that have that highest score number. So, and that also includes how long have they been on coordinated entry? So which kind of correlates with how long they have been possibly on the streets.
And my understanding is that the longer you are unhoused, the more difficult it is for a lot of different reasons, for a lot, even psychological reasons. I find just fascinating. The longer you are unhoused, the harder it is to overcome those barriers. And so I'm curious when you say there's actually a score, and one of the components of that score is how long someone has been unhoused. How does that length of time get calculated? Do you go up the list the longer you've been unhoused, or mm-hmm. do you go down the list?
Up the list.
The longer.
Your score is higher.
Yeah, so long-term homelessness is a priority. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And many of the barriers are, you know, credit scores, evictions, things that keep you not competitive in our current rental market.
Oh, right. And, oh, right. Of course.
And we don't think you should be unhoused because you have a low credit score. I mean, maybe your partner didn't pay the rent for months and you didn't even know, and suddenly you're in this category of not being worthy of renting. So those are...
Huh, I hadn't even thought of that. That's interesting.
Huh. Yeah. At CHAT, I would say that we really, truly believe that housing is a human right.
Yeah.
And we do our best to put anybody that we can into housing. This system just helps us pull those at the need it the most at the moment.
Yeah.
So, and our goal is to get through that list as fast as possible. So, I mean, one of CHAT's sayings is that we want to house everybody in our community. And so, and if we are able to accomplish that, we don't need chat anymore. And we were sitting at a table the other day talking about this, and we were just like, oh my gosh, can you imagine just like shutting the doors, locking the doors and walking away and just being like, I get to go do something else.
Yep.
So going back to what she says about helpers, seem to be the one that comes and does this work. All 30 something people that work for chat are all helpers. We are all in it for the same reasons. We all want to see people get off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think that there's not one of us in there that would not happily walk away and go work at a coffee shop.
Yep.
If that was our next day job and yep. nobody else was on the streets.
Right. Right. The ultimate working yourself out of your job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We're talking with Nicole Drummond and Amber Benedict from Chico Housing Action Team, just sort of getting an update on the growth of chat, the work of chat, and all of those things, and the homeless crisis here in our community and what is going on there. It is not going away anytime soon. So anyway, we're getting that update. I do want to go back to one of the comments that you made, Nicole Drummond, about, you know, again, when I said, what is the product that you offer? What are the service that you offer? And and you said that, everything that, you know, removing the barriers to being housed. And, you know, being unhoused is often the manifestation of so many underlying issues, right? When we talk about, oh, that person is homeless, it's like to not have a house is just a characteristic. It's not a who they are. And to become unhoused is usually the result of so many steps along the way. And so, Nicole Drummond or Amber Benedict, I want to go back to the comment that you made, Nicole, where you said, you know, we do everything to remove those barriers. And you even said when somebody needs to reconnect with their family, talk about how things like reconnecting with your family actually helps somebody overcome the barriers of securing housing. Amber Benedict.
I would start with saying how just putting somebody in housing makes that stigma go away automatically. It's amazing to take somebody and get them into housing and then go visit them a week later and see how you can barely even tell at that point that they were on the streets for however long that they were. But when it comes to connecting them back with their families, it's that community piece. It's that caring kindness piece. It's the making them feel worthy again as a human being. And that is, I would say, one of our main goals at chat is making people feel that humanity piece again that is lost when they are out on the streets. So any way that we can get them connected with a child that has been removed because of the campfire and they're halfway across the states now, and they weren't able to support themselves, and so they sent their kid halfway across the states to aunt and uncle so they could take care of them, we're going to do our best to reach out through the social services and try to get them reconnected again with their child and provide them with a phone and internet and ways to make that communication happen.
Right.
Many of our houses also become like family for people that don't necessarily reconnect with their birth family. They find, you know, family and community and home and rituals and comfort and connection and all of that beauty in the shared housing as well.
And with our volunteers. That's one of the amazing things about our volunteer system. Yes. That we have the social services, the people that work at chat, that's not really, they can't create those concrete relationships, but volunteers can come in and they can be like, hey, can I take you to coffee? And sit down and have those one-on-one conversations and learn about their past and learn that the person has a degree in history, and what drew them into having that degree and why, or learn about their children or whatever it is, and build more of that one-on-one connection, which is so important for everyone. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the other thing is, we talked about earlier about, you know, being unhoused is not the problem. It's all of the underlying problems that lead you to that moment. And one of the things that can lead us to that moment of being unhoused is that lack of community. I mean, many folks, I mean, if I got sick, I do have friends where, yeah, like if I couldn't work for some reason, if I had an illness and I needed to recover for 6 months or a year, I do have a social safety net where, or a friend group, a family group, where I could say, you know, I can't work and I'm really struggling. I do have people in my life that would say, come to our house, or, you know, we will help you, or we will all work together. I live in a community where people look out for each other. And so I thought that was probably a part of it as well. But it makes so much sense that it's like, sure, you could have a house and it's just a structure. It's not humanity. It's not life. It's not living. It's not human. So, yeah, that's the amazing part of chat.
Yes, that creating that safety net again is something that's my 3M question for sure, is figuring out how to not only add in like where our volunteers fit in this and creating those relationships, but where other areas in our community can connect into, whether that is through a religious organization or through school or through the roommates that they have. I mean, starting out with just that, how do we build those connections between a group of three or four people that may have some natural connection because of their own experience, but for the most part that's still something that needs to be worked on some. And so we start with that and try to build outward. And how do we connect people with a job? How do we get them back into the Chico community in general? Chico has a big community feel. It's one of the things I love about being in Chico. And so I want to take people off the streets, put them in housing, and figure out how to reconnect them into the community.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. You know, it's in some ways it seems like that's the secret sauce of chat, is that acknowledgement that it's more than just providing a house. It's more than just providing, you know, dental work. It's more than just providing, medication. It's more than that. It's creating. It's humanizing. It's really fascinating. And so I'm wondering, again, both of you come at this work, I won't say from an academic place. You come at this work because you love this work and you're passionate about it, and this is what you want to do. And then you went to school so that you could do it very well. And I'm wondering that sort of chat secret sauce, is that sort of common knowledge, or is that just something that it's like, huh, this is really organic through chat?
I do think organizations, especially in any service work, do need a unique secret sauce. You know, the organizational climate culture is very cultivated at the beginning, at inception, and human services can come at from a lot of different angles, and the ones that are the most successful are the ones that continue to ignite and facilitate that passion and that caring. And I would add, well, still taking care of yourself so you don't burn out and you can keep being passionate. But I think my education experiences has helped me to use that passion in a cultivated, specific, targeted way to really make as much change as possible in the world. You know, in my 20s, I wanted to save the world and would often be overwhelmed by the need. And I feel like through my experiences of learning both in different organizations and academically, I found ways to target my energy to be most efficient and really ignite other people's passions. Because when you can work within other people's strengths, you can get so much done, and it's beautiful. And the people you're connecting with are real people, and they can tell when you care and when you're just doing a job. So I think everyone at our organization cares so deeply, and all of our residents feel that, and I think the community feels that as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm always grateful for that. I can only do that work, honestly.
Yeah, Yep. Amber, were you going to say something?
I would say that has to be one of my favorite things about getting to work at JET is the fact that I get to connect in a real way, not just with the population that we are housing, but also with the people that work with us, alongside us, the founders, the collaborations that we're able to make out in the community with other organizations. Definitely plays a large role in that. And as far as the educational piece, I mean, yeah, there's some of it that comes along with it. There's research, and I always like to try to back up anything that we put together with the research and the data. But I would say that's where the biggest extent of my education comes into it. It's really honing in on that human connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. So, Amber Benedict, I want to turn to you in particular. You were here on The Real Issue a couple years ago. I think it was about 2 years ago. I think it was just about 2 years ago, almost that. And we were talking about, at that point, it was the proposed Everhart Village. It was proposed. And you and I were talking about it because at that time you were the project manager and you hadn't even broken ground. It was just an idea. And but a lot of progress has been made and interesting YouTube videos on your website, which I thought was kind of fun. Respectful Revolution, of course, pulled that together. So, Amber Benedict, first, before I go into, you know, all the progress, explain the vision and what is becoming the reality of Everhart Village.
Yes. So Everhart Village is going to be a space for 20 individuals that have serious mental illnesses. We are partnering with Behavior Health along with the county also. So, but Behavior Health in particular will be referring individuals to us. So it's 20 tiny sleeping cabins. Each person will have their own individual sleeping cabin. They will get to come into the village. They will get their own personal space. They will get to, they'll get food. They will get a place to shower, a place to take care of all of their basic needs within the village. But they will also get to have that partnership with Behavior Health. So they'll be working on stabilization for mental health purposes. And then on the chat side, the Everhart Village side, our goal is to move them forward into that permanent housing piece. And this is not something that's going to happen overnight with these individuals coming into the village because they are higher need people. But we have it so that we're going to work on trust and learning some of those basic skills, again, as far as keeping yourself housed and keeping yourself cared for, your basic needs skills. And then we are going to start working on those barriers that they may have in place, whether it's a lack of ID or a lack of any type of income, no SSI be possibly put in place, anything that will help them become more stabilized as an individual.
Mm-hmm. And so because they require to get into the village, and again, 20 sleeping cabins, it sounds like a lot, but in terms of the need, it's not a lot. It really isn't. But anyway, we do what we can. We walk by, you know, one foot in front of the other kind of thing. So those 20 sleeping cabins, it requires a referral by Butte Behavioral Health. So what does that mean? Somebody is, you know, reaches a certain level of, you know, mental health needs, but also that other piece of they are ready and able to start transitioning into permanent housing?
So Behavioral Health already has a couple of programs that go out onto the streets that are in the encampments, and they're connecting with people there. They're doing their best to provide either clinical services to them or medication services. And so it's those individuals that we are going to see coming into the village. So it's ones that are willing to connect with Behavioral Health in that way. And then they will refer them to us.
And do you have any guess on how long somebody, I know it's and I remember our conversation from a couple of years ago where you were like, this is a long road for people. Mm-hmm. And so do you have any idea at this point what sort of time frame, you know, 20 20 people will be able to stay in the village before you believe they'd be ready to transition to more permanent housing?
So I'm going to state that it's going to be the individual themselves. My guess is that there will be a handful that come in that only need maybe 6 months mm-hmm. with us, and we can figure out that housing piece for them. There are other individuals that are going to come in, and they're going to need a good 18 months to 2 years. And we're going to do our best to keep them there to continue that stabilization piece for them, and hopefully create more relationships with behavioral health to maybe move them into like a permanent supportive living situation for ones that do need that more hands-on support. Permanent housing, supportive housing is meant to be housing that has more intentional support from behavior health. So it's kind of like what we see in like the Avenida apartments, if you're familiar mm-hmm. with them at all. So we have a little in our community, and my hope is that we'll see more of a growth of that.
Yeah.
So CHAT itself is also doing a lot of work to partner with behavior health so that we can see that kind of growth also happen within our housing. We already have a very good connection with them. In our regular housing model, we house close to 30 individuals that are already from behavioral health. And so we're just kind of expecting to see more of that transition from Everhart Village.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but the goal with Everhart Village is to really create that space where they can start that healing process and really kind of start to be able to take ownership again of their own lives.
When is it going to be ready?
Mm-hmm. That's a tricky, tricky
yeah,
question.
Yeah, I know.
2 years ago, what did I say?
I don't remember. You know, I can't remember. But 2 years ago, it must have been longer than 2 years ago because it was before the pandemic. No.
No, it was right at the beginning.
No, it was. Oh, it's all a blur. Mm-hmm. It is a time warp. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't remember what you said.
Yeah. Yes, it's definitely been a moving target this entire time. The longer it takes, the more I get a little bit question, or I'm not quite sure if I want to give those answers. We're going to say early next year, the early part of next year.
Okay.
So, but we have made a ton of progress. I mean, we're seeing groundbreaking happening. There are pads being placed in the ground. We have an amazing volunteer crew heading out, working on the tiny sleeping cabins. Was that we had 28 volunteers just this month come out to help with the sleeping cabins. And so, I mean, this is a whole community effort. Everybody is wanting to see this get done. So we're hoping to have it soon.
Yeah. And so one of the things that happened during the pandemic, or, you know, in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, is we've seen, you know, supply chain breakdown, and now they're getting fixed, and now we're seeing inflation. And I know that the cost of Everhart Village has, I won't say skyrocketed, but it has increased in a way that you hadn't expected. How did you fill that gap? And then that, I think, sort of rolls over into, I want to bring Nicole into the conversation as well, is that how does that roll over into this idea of partnerships in the community?
So it's almost doubled since the original budget that we put in place. So inflation has been brutal. And we've been able to do a ton of fundraising. We have some good connections out in the community. We have Bob Trausch, which is really helpful. He's able to go out and talk to some people, and next thing I know, there's like, here's a $50,000 check that was donated by so-and-so. And so it's once again taking back to that community piece, because none of this has been done by grants. We do have a few corporate sponsorships that have taken place. So our biggest one being Cal Water, they gave us $200,000 to help with the infrastructure to bring in water to Everhart Village. But besides that, just Lots of little donations.
A lot of them. I know a lot of them. And that's the nature of this work, is constant fundraising. Nicole Drummond, in the last minute or so that we have, unfortunately, talk about that, you know, raising money, but also you talked about efficiency, growing the organization to be as efficient as possible. And then you even mentioned the coordinated entry system now allows you to think about, like, how do we work with different agencies and organizations in order to give those wraparound services. Talk about that. And then, of course, how can people get involved?
Yeah, so really there's been so much community involvement in everything that CHAT does, from financial involvement to expertise. We have lots of formal arrangements with organizations that support us. We have MOUs with True North Housing Alliance and Safe Space, and we connect. The VFW has helped us to find housing, all sorts of things like that. And if you want to get involved, ChicoHousingActionTeam.net. You can volunteer, you can contribute financially. Everhart Village would never have come together without all the different individuals in our community, all the different organizations, all the different businesses. We have a huge page of sponsorships that I should be able to name off the top of my head, Calwater definitely being one, the Realtors Association, the love and the recognizing the need for this really innovative project in our community has been beautiful to witness, and we couldn't do it without everyone.
Nicole Drummond, Executive Director of Chico Housing Action Team, and Amber Benedict, Social Services Director of Chico Housing Action Team. It is honestly from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for being here and sharing all of the amazing work, but also thanks for doing the work that you do. Carrying on that, just the amazing work of the founders and expanding that work and continuing it in that sort of attitude of, you know, goodwill and open-heartedness, and everyone deserves housing.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Appreciate KZFR.
All right, this brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue. This edition was made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high-tech auto body shop specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. Knockout Collision works on all makes and models and always provides complimentary consultations. Appointment or information can be found at 899-9202. You can also find them at knockoutcollisionrepair.com, Chico's Fast and Fair Collision Repair. All right, I'll be back here next time. The folks from Writing on Air are here in the studio with me, and they're going to take over the controls in just a second, and I'll be back next week. Until then, peace out.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound. Home, where my thoughts escaping. Home, where my music's playing. Home, where my love lies waiting silently for every day is an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories, and every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was. Where my music's playing, home, where my love lies waiting silently for me. Tonight I'll sing my songs again, I'll play the game and pretend. But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness and harmony. I need someone to comfort me.